BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And friends, we thank you for joining us today, a very important program on Crosstalk. The topic of COVID-19 vaccinations are dominating the headlines, top stories on newscasts across the country, and it's only going to intensify. According to the New York Times, the federal government is launching a $250 million public education campaign starting this week in print, social media, and radio. Television will follow. Already the news has shown the trucks and the planes conveying the vaccinations to states and communities across the country. Reports are all over the board here about those that are willing to obtain the vaccine. According to the New York Post report, they say that greater than 80% of Americans say they would take the vaccine, some right away, some after a while, but only 15% said they would refuse a vaccine entirely. On the other hand, Newsmax is reporting a poll from the Uniformed Firefighters Association revealing that of New York City firefighters, about 55% said they will not take the vaccine. Other reports are coming from other countries saying a vast majority of people not wanting the vaccine. Some are pushing for mandatory vaccination if fewer than 70% of people take it willingly. And then this. Dr. Kelly Moore, the Associate Director of the Immunization Action Coalition, told CNN that the COVID vaccines have not been tested on the frail elderly and warned that the public should not be alarmed if we hear reports of multiple people dying at a long-term care facility after receiving doses of the COVID vaccination. Yet in some states, they are beginning with the frail elderly population. And while there are reports of certain vaccines showing effective rates of over 90%, we also have the British Health Minister announcing a new coronavirus strain, a variant that is growing faster than the current variant. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of today's program is not to tell you whether you should or should not take the vaccine. That's your personal decision. What our guest today is going to be discussing is information that is not coming through very loud or clear through national media, but information you need to know. Joining us today, we welcome back Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. The NVIC is a nonprofit charity co-founded with parents of DPT vaccine-injured children in 1982. For some 38 years now, she's led this national grassroots movement and public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms and informed consent protections in the public health system. She's researched, analyzed, publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, the policy, the laws and ethics and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. She's co-author of DPT, A Shot in the Dark, also author of The Consumer's Guide to Childhood Vaccines, Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, The New Epidemic, and Reforming Vaccine Policy and Law, A Guide. Barbara, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy our conversations. It is a very unusual time that we're all experiencing and have this whole year. And as you point out, there now is a huge public relations campaign being conducted by the government as well as the pharmaceutical companies and medical trade organizations to have everyone get a dose or two doses, rather, of the newly approved under an emergency use authorization, newly approved Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, which is a messenger RNA vaccine. And today, that happened last week. The emergency use authorization was given by the FDA to Pfizer and BioNTech. But today, the FDA Vaccine Advisory Committee is meeting on the Moderna vaccine, which was funded by NIAID, part of NIH, another messenger RNA vaccine that will, I'm sure, be approved under this emergency use authorization. People need to understand that when you have an emergency use authorization approval, it does not mean the vaccine has been licensed formally. It does not mean that the companies have jumped through all the hoops and ticked off all the boxes in the licensing process, mainly the data that needs to be provided to get a formal license from the FDA. Because of the pandemic, they're giving these companies, they're allowing the companies to fast track the vaccines to market so that they can be available for all who want to use them. Under an EUA, everyone is supposed to be given informed consent. That is, they are not supposed to be coerced or forced in any way to get the vaccine. So if you're in a situation where you're being threatened or coerced by a doctor or anyone else into getting a vaccine under an emergency use authorization, you need to understand that that's not according to federal law.
Wow. Well, Barbara, we've got so much to unpack today, and you've already started the unpacking process, and we appreciate that. It's been called Operation Warp Speed, and as you pointed out, we're not talking about single vaccination, but there's different manufacturers that are really competing for market share in this. But you've studied vaccinations for decades, and you talk about this emergency use, but in your opinion, has there been sufficient trials, has there been sufficient tests conducted for an aggressive public vaccination campaign?
Well, I'll just use the example of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. That was last week, as I mentioned, the FDA gave Pfizer and BioNTech the emergency use authorization. We, our organization, National Vaccine Information Center, did present 3 minutes of public testimony. One of our board members, who's also our director of research and patient safety, gave testimony and pointed out that there were many high-risk populations that were not included in the Pfizer-BioNTech trials. In other words, it was mostly healthy people who were studied. There were only about 25% of people in there in the last phase of the trials that had various kinds of health care conditions that many people in this country have. More than 50% of people in America have one or more chronic health care conditions. And we're talking heart disease, kidney, lung disease, severe allergies, autoimmune diseases, diabetes, asthma, et cetera. We have a very chronically ill population, unfortunately, in the 21st century. And these individuals were not, they were a minority of the individuals studied in these trials. So in some cases, they were completely excluded. People who had a history of anaphylaxis, severe allergies, which is a severe allergic reaction, were not in there. Pregnant women, breastfeeding women were not in there. Healthy adults, even healthy adults over age 85 were not in those trials. And they're the ones that in the nursing homes that are going to be targeted first for use of this vaccine.
I'd like to deal with this for a moment because I saw the story in LifeSiteNews.com. Dr. Kelly Moore, who's in favor of vaccinations, but indicated the vaccines have not been tested on the frail elderly, and saying, quote, we shouldn't be unnecessarily alarmed if there are reports once we start vaccinating of someone or multiple people dying within a day or two of their vaccination who are residents of a long-term care facility. To me, that's alarming.
That's exactly right. I mean, individuals with neurological problems like Alzheimer's or those who would not be able to give informed consent or able to comply with scheduled doctor's visits or lab tests, who would be unable to understand and follow the trial-related instructions, they were not included in the phase 2-3 studies. That's a lot of people in long-term health care facilities. In some of the trials, just a very minority of people were obese or had hypertension, high blood pressure, and yet these folks are going to be candidates for these vaccines, or rather the Pfizer vaccine. I don't know what they're going to do today on Moderna, but I imagine it'll be the same. The only contraindication, really, that has been listed by the FDA in this emergency use authorization for Pfizer was an allergic reaction to a previous Pfizer COVID-19 vaccination. In other words, there's no conditions that are a contraindication, which indicates how we really need more data, and it shows some of the shortcomings of fast tracking a vaccine to licensure. Most vaccines take, in the past, have taken 10 to 20 years to go through the development, testing, and licensing process. These COVID-19 vaccines, of which I believe this Pfizer vaccine is, which has already been approved under emergency use, and the Moderna vaccine, which I'm pretty sure will be approved today, these vaccines have been less than 9 months, like 9 to 10 months in development, and yet they're already going to be put out there for people to use. Now, what have we seen since we've seen that in Britain, there have been allergic reactions, anaphylactic reactions. And when you look at the trials, you see that there were also, we have not only anaphylactic reactions, but we're now seeing Bell's palsy. And Bell's palsy is inflammation of the nerves. And it can, what it can do is it can paralyze half your face. Some people will recover, some people don't recover. It points out that we really have a lot more to learn about these new vaccines because they're using technology that's never been licensed before for use in humans, messenger RNA technology. And messenger RNA vaccines, what they do is they inject human cells with messenger RNA. And now this is complicated, but it catalyzes biological reactions in cells and controls gene expression. So this messenger RNA is delivered in these lipid, which means fat, nanoparticles to stimulate cells in the body to become manufacturers of viral proteins. So in essence, your body becomes a vaccine manufacturing plant. We've never used this technology before in humans. Now, the vaccine companies and the government say, the health agencies say, there's no problem with this new technology. But there are questions about it that some scientists have raised, including the ability of these vaccines to cause an autoimmune reaction, severe allergic reactions. Again, I would argue that we need a lot more testing before we just have everyone.
You mentioned the Bell's palsy. There's other reactions that people who have been part of the trial have experienced as well?
Well, what we have, the New York Times in the last few days did say that the FDA is now recommending that people watch for Bell's palsy when they get these Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So there were 4 reported cases of Bell's palsy among Modernas, more than 30,000 clinical trial participants. And three occurred in the vaccine trial, received the vaccine, and one was in the placebo arm of the trial. But in Pfizer's trial of about 43,000 participants, there were 4 cases of Bell's palsy and none in the placebo control arm. Now, the government's saying, this doesn't show that there's a causal association. This is kind of like the background rate for Bell's palsy in the normal population, because you can get Bell's palsy after a viral infection.
We get a break right here. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, Creation Seminar speaker at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, any evidence for creation from the solar system?
Yes, there are, Chris. In fact, quite a few. One of the ICR physicists, Dr. Russ Humphreys, made a prediction a few years ago before the exploration of Jupiter by satellite. He had developed a theory of the magnetic field of planets in the solar system based on the Bible. And the satellite found the evidence fit his model and not the evolutionary model of long ages. In particular, Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter, has an Earth-like magnetic field, but it's tilted 80 degrees away from the spin axis. This pretty much proves that the magnetic field is not produced by fluid currents in the moon's interior, as is postulated by long-agers for Earth. As a matter of fact, the Earth's dipole magnetic field is decaying so fast, soon it's going to be gone. It couldn't be the result of events millions of years ago, and that's the Back to Genesis truth.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us today from the National Vaccine Information Center. She's president of the organization. We're talking about COVID vaccinations, information you need to know, our topic here today on the broadcast. Barbara, as we're talking about this, in my opening comments, I gave statistics from the New York Times talking about 80% of Americans say they would take the vaccine, some right away, some after a while, but only 15% saying they would refuse the vaccine entirely. Do you accept those numbers?
That is completely contrary to all the polls that we've seen and have been published both in the United States and in Europe. And those polls basically indicate that about 50% of people do not want to take the vaccine at this point. I don't know if that will change, mm-hmm. but that's an outlier poll. I would say that there is a great deal of concern on the part of the public about fast-track vaccines, and these are vaccines that have been rushed to market.
I think
it's logical and it's a legitimate concern.
Yeah, I've also seen alerts coming from various pro-life groups concerned by some of the vaccines having used embryonic stem cell lines in the development of the vaccine.
Well, there's two issues. One is that the fetal cell DNA in the vaccines, some of the vaccines, and the other is the use of abortive fetal cells for the testing of the vaccines. I believe that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines used it in terms of testing the vaccines, but they did not use it in terms of production. Mm-hmm. Although I believe the AstraZeneca vaccine, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which has not come forward for an EUA yet in this country, does contain aborted fetal cell lines.
Well. Yeah. We are talking about the warning for allergy sufferers, warnings
right.
for as well those who are, what, expectant?
Well, the thing is that again, the government, our government has not put a warning label in terms of on these vaccines for people who have a history of anaphylaxis. The UK has. The UK has said if you carry an EpiPen, if you have a history of anaphylaxis, which is the most severe kind of an allergic reaction, because you can die from anaphylaxis, you can go unconscious, you can have difficulty breathing, your blood pressure can drop suddenly, true anaphylactic reactions. But they're saying in the UK that you need to be very careful about if you have strong, you know, severe allergies or anaphylactic, carrying an EpiPen, you have to be careful about getting this vaccine or shouldn't get the vaccine. But not here in this country. The only contraindication right now for the Pfizer vaccine is if you've had a previous reaction to a previous dose of the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine.
I'm looking also at a report that was on the vaccinereaction.org site mentioning that 10 to 15% of the volunteers who participated in these trial studies that they had significantly noticeable side effects.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in some of the trials, it was much higher than that. Now the line that's coming out right now is that if you have a strong reaction to these vaccines, and the reactions generally are high fevers. I mean, we're talking some people having adults having 105 degree fevers. That is, like, really dangerous for adults. It's dangerous for children, too, but children can have higher fevers than adults and not have brain damage. But adults can have brain injury after having a super high fever. So this is a very strong fever reaction that we're seeing in some of these recipients. Then severe headache and muscle aches, severe fatigue. In fact, some people are saying you have to take 1 or 2 days off from work after you get the vaccines. This is going to be a disincentive, I think, for people to get a second dose of the vaccine, because both the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine that is already out there and the Moderna vaccine, which is probably going to be approved today under the emergency use authorization, they have the similar profiles in terms of reactions, and they require 2 doses. given several weeks apart. So if you have a really pronounced reaction and have to take off work, you're probably not, you know, going to be as enthusiastic about getting the second dose.
Right. And that's important. Is there a time in which that has to be done or makes of non-effect that first dose?
They say, I think it's with Pfizer, it's 21 days. I'm not sure on Moderna. It's probably around the same 2 to 3 week window. They say that if you miss getting it exactly 21 days after or whatever, you don't have to get the first one again, another dose of the first. I don't know exactly what the total window is, but I know it doesn't have to be exactly on the 21st day.
And there seems to be uncertainty as well as whether someone who gets vaccinated against coronavirus, that they would no longer be at risk for an illness. I see also a story in the Israel National News, immunologists warning that vaccines will not end the threat of spreading COVID, and people who are vaccinated still will need to wear masks. Any comment on that?
This is extraordinary. I mean, vaccines are supposed to prevent infection and transmission of infection in the recipient. The story on these vaccines is they do not know if these vaccines are going to prevent infection and transmission in the recipient. They are saying that they are highly effective against COVID-19 disease, a severe case of COVID-19 in the person who's been vaccinated. But if you cannot guarantee that you won't be infected and transmit to others, that's why they're saying everyone's going to continue to have to social distance and wear masks, et cetera, because they just don't know the full how protective these vaccines are in terms of preventing infection and transmission. And that's why they're saying there's got to be a very high uptake. There's so many questions.
Yes,
there's
questions
about the PCR test that's being used to diagnose people
right.
with current infections of COVID-19, that it's very unreliable, has a very high false positive rate.
Yeah.
So you've got problems with testing. You've got problems with needing more data about these vaccines that are being fast-tracked to licensure. And it's no wonder that people are taking a wait-and-see approach, because this is all very highly unusual, the way it's being rolled out.
Well, especially when you see the reports coming up about Coca-Cola testing positive for COVID. I mean, something's wrong there.
Right. That's the whole issue of what are these tests really measuring?
Mm-hmm.
And there's been, in fact, a group of scientists who have challenged the original paper that came out in January of 2020 that said these PCR tests were valid tests for confirming COVID. Because let's face it, all the lockdown policies, all the closing of these small businesses, these restaurants, I mean, the restaurant industry has been destroyed in New York City. All these restrictions were based on when people got tested and they were testing positive, saying you had to have a less than 5% positivity rate in the community before you could open everything up. Well, if the tests aren't accurate, what are we measuring? And why are we having policies that are basically ruining our economy? I just read a stat that there are 8.5 million people now, more million people in poverty because they've lost their jobs. They can't pay their mortgages and their rent. They can't buy food. I'm in Florida, and the food banks here are struggling. I mean, people who have never been in food bank lines don't have food because they've lost their jobs.
This really begs another question here, and it was just last week, and we played a clip of a Dr. Pierre Corey. He's a physician at Aurora St. Luke's Medical Center here in the Milwaukee area. He testified last week at a Senate hearing, and he was begging the National Institutes of Health to review his study of ivermectin. It's a drug that's been around for decades. Mm. He described it as a wonder drug, proving to have a miraculous impact. Those are his words. But yet, there's been a huge reluctance to even study some of these drugs that have been around for some time.
Well, you see, you can't give a company an emergency use authorization for a new vaccine if you have existing ways to prevent a disease or treat a disease. That's why we haven't seen the money. There's been $9 billion given to companies to develop COVID-19 vaccines by the U.S. government. But there has not been given that kind of money to developing treatments and other ways of prevention. So the less expensive ways of preventing, and there have been many studies published about needing to have high vitamin D levels and needing to have zinc, proper zinc levels and selenium levels, et cetera, as a way to help prevent a severe case of COVID-19. There's the drug that you talked about, there are other drugs too that could have been more thoroughly investigated, but all the emphasis has been on vaccines. So it's really unfortunate that the public doesn't have a lot of different ways to try to get through a bout with COVID-19 without suffering severe consequences.
I'd like to hit another issue with you as well, and this is the scientific head of Operation Warp Speed, Dr. Monsif, he said it takes 75% to 80% of people vaccinated in the United States to establish herd immunity, something that he anticipates will happen between May and June of next year.
Well, if it turns out that the vaccines only prevent severe COVID-19 disease, but don't prevent infection and transmission, I'm not sure how they're supposed to achieve vaccine-acquired herd immunity.
Hmm. And then we also have those who are saying, unless we get a volunteer rate of 70% taking this, Barbara, they're talking about mandatory vaccination. They're saying we have to hit that 70% mark, and if it's less than that, we've got legislators who have said that they're ready to advance legislation to force vaccinations.
Right. They introduced a bill in New York to do that. We're opposing all vaccine mandates with COVID-19 vaccines. I mean, this is just, we don't have enough information, and it's just not right. The way that they will be, quote, forced would be that they convince businesses, employers, and restaurants and airlines. The airlines have already talked about not allowing people to fly unless they can show proof that they are tested negative to COVID-19 and also have proof of vaccination. So that has already been talked about. There is a card that the government wants everyone to carry that will give people information about, they call it the vaccination card.
Mm-hmm.
And that it will have information, a written card that you can put in your wallet that will tell you, you know, what vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine you had and when the next dose is due. And it will record your name, and this will all be, of course, electronically tracked as well, your date of birth, your medical information, the dates where you were vaccinated, the name of who performed the vaccination and where. And, you know, this is very concerning because it's like having to have a passport in order to, well, they can then say, well, you know, I'm sorry, you can't go into a big box store, you can't go into groceries or get groceries, or you can't do this, you know, this or that, unless you show that you've had this vaccine.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest, and a little while from now, we'll be opening phone lines for you to ask your questions, and I'd like you to formulate your questions now, just right to the point. We will not have time for long stories, but be ready to ask your questions. Formulate them now. We'll be giving more info in a moment. You're listening to Crosstalk.
VCY invites you to obtain an audio recording of the Gospel According to John as narrated by Brad Canterbury.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
John's Gospel, presenting the words of Jesus, the way of salvation.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever...
You can share this as a gift or for listening over and over on your daily commute. VCY America is making available this narrated Gospel of John on 2 CDs for a donation of $12. Call during business hours 1-800-729-9829.
That's 800-729-9829.
But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name.
Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest here today on Crosstalk from the National Vaccine Information Center. Friends, you probably have questions, but multiple ones. And so we're going to open the phone lines. We will not have lots of time for, you know, we don't have time for stories, but we'll take your quick questions here. The number 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Barbara, you're tracking this, and your websites are available. You're putting forth new stories as they develop, because there's so much that's unfolding. I mean, every day there's something new that's coming forth. How is it our listeners can stay informed?
Well, we have a weekly journal newspaper called The Vaccine Reaction at thevaccinereaction.org. And we pick some of the best stories that are out there, and we do news analyses. And when they're short articles, they're all referenced, but it gives you kind of an overview of what's happening out there every week. We also have our flagship website, NVIC.org. We're about to post in the next week or two a huge report on COVID-19 and COVID-19 vaccines, all referenced. So stay tuned to NVIC.org, because we often put up information there, longer analyses of what's going on. And then we have, of course, our advocacy portion of what we do at the NVICAdvocacy.org, and that's where you can get involved in defending your right in the states, in your state in which you live, to make vaccine choices without being punished.
Okay, folks, again, those websites are NVIC.org, NVIC, that stands for National Vaccine Information Center. There is also NVICAdvocacy.org. And the third site, thevaccinereaction.org. Let's go to the phone lines, Charleston, Illinois. Tony, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm already taking vitamin C and vitamin D from my doctor several years ago. How many cc's or milligrams of vitamin zinc would help with my immune system? Thank you very much.
Well, I am not a doctor, and I do not give out medical advice. I'm a consumer advocate. I would definitely recommend that you consult a trusted healthcare professional who will give you the exact amount of vitamin C and D3 and zinc and selenium that you should be using.
Let's go to Jeff next in Jefferson, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yes. Have you seen the John Hopkins report that they quickly removed that showed the same amount of deaths in the United States, pretty close, 2019 and 2020? How is that hardly a pandemic?
Yes, I am aware of those. That I think in the last 15 years, if you look at the total number of deaths every year, that this year, as of November, we don't seem to be up there any higher than what we have been in the past. And we're checking that out, because you're right, it was removed. There's an interesting stat here. I took a look at Florida, which is where I'm living, and we have the same population as New York. But our governor here in Florida, Governor DeSantis, has not locked the state down. For a few months last spring, we were kind of locked down a little bit, but he has basically kept the state open. And New York, of course, had very strict lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So same populations in both states. In Florida, we have about 1.2 million cases of COVID-19 reported and 20,000 deaths. In New York, 850,000 cases reported, almost half of what we had in Florida, but 38,000 deaths. So there's a higher, you know, there's a high, more deaths in New York. So I think we really do have to look at the approaches of different states.
Mm-hmm.
And why, now, maybe in Florida we have an advantage because we have a lot of vitamin D exposure here. We live in a sunny state where the sun shines all year-round. That's not true for New York. So there's a lot of different things that need to be looked at. Why are some states doing better than others? But certainly, if you New York's strict lockdown has not prevented that state from having a lot of deaths.
Jeff, thanks for the call. We're going next to Lewis, who is calling in. Hi, Lewis. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, how do we know that vaccine is going to be a good vaccine and how it's going to affect our body? And so, and my other question is, and that vaccine, so are they going to force us to, you know, to take it?
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. We're all different. We're all different genetically, biologically. We live in different environments. We have different exposures to different kinds of toxins because of the different environments we live in. So we don't all have the same family, personal and family medical history. And yet these vaccine policies are one size fits all. They're not personalized. And that's why it's so important to have enough data pre-licensure for people to make informed decisions. And it certainly should be our freedom in this country to be able to have the information and be able to say, freely say, yes, I want it, or no, I don't want it, and not be sanctioned if you say you don't want it. That's informed consent, which is an ethical principle that underpins the ethical practice of medicine. It's under attack right now because there are those who say nobody should have a choice. Everybody should get it. Well, the truth is that everybody doesn't have the same risk for that product because, again, we're all different.
Yeah.
So are we going to be forced to take it? I think that's going to be up to the American people. We're at a crossroads right now as these vaccines are being approved for emergency use and eventually will be licensed. We have to stand up in our communities and in our states and fight for the right to be able to make voluntary vaccine decisions. That's why we have the MVIC advocacy portal at MVICadvocacy.org. It is a communications tool that puts you into electronic contact with your own legislators. And we give you in your email box only information about your state when legislation is moving that will either take away your right to make a vaccine choice or will expand your right to make a vaccine choice. This is going to be a crazy year, 2021, and everything will be decided dependent upon what the American people choose to do.
Thank you for Lewis, and keep in mind that a lot of legislatures are going to now start gearing up. They're swearing their legislators in early January. The legislative sessions are beginning state by state by state, and I believe, Barbara, we're going to see a plethora of pieces of legislation introduced, some that are designed to do exactly what you're warning about, to take away individual rights in that regard.
Yes. We will definitely see that because the pharmaceutical, medical trade, and government lobby is very, very strong.
Yeah.
And again, a tremendous amount of money, taxpayer money, has been committed to developing these vaccines and fast-tracking them to market. There will be a huge push to have everyone get it. You know, it's up to us as Americans to fight for our freedom.
Let's go to Will next, calling in. Hi, Will, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question for your guest. Is she helping to communicate the hoax of germ theory versus terrain theory in terms of...
That's for the medical professionals and the healthcare professionals to do. What the National Vaccine Information Center was founded in 1982 by parents of DPT vaccine-injured children. Our mission is to prevent vaccine injuries and deaths through public education and to defend human rights and civil liberties, mm-hmm. which includes the human right to informed consent. That is a very interesting argument, but my goal is to get information to people so they can make informed decisions.
Well, Duchamp admitted on his deathbed that his theory was wrong on how...
Again, this is an area, Will, that our guest is not, that's not her expertise. We're dealing with the area of her expertise, but to thank you for calling in. Leroy is calling in from Atlanta, Georgia. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. How are you, guest? I have three questions and a suggestion. The first question is, if you have tested positive for COVID-19, do you have to take the vaccine? The second is there any, do you have any concern with the fact that it has to be transported at 94 degrees below zero there's a part in the vaccine that's called the luciferase protein, I guess. Do you have any comment on that?
Okay. Thank you, Leroy.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. With most infectious diseases, if you have had it, and again, these tests are very inaccurate, so you're saying you tested positive. Let's say it's true. You had COVID-19. You've had the symptoms. You know you've been sick, and you tested positive. Under normal circumstances, most doctors would say you have naturally acquired immunity. How long does that last? It depends upon the infection. On this infection, this SARS-CoV-2 infection, they're saying that naturally acquired immunity is very temporary, that it only lasts a couple of weeks, a couple of months, or they don't know how long it lasts. They're saying the vaccine-acquired immunity, they're trying to sort of say that that's a better immunity. You know, I think that, again, we come back to not having enough information because they had less than a year to study this virus and how it acts in the human body. They don't even know the origin of the virus really yet. So many outstanding questions. So normally, if you've had the disease, you wouldn't have to have the vaccine, but that they're not, everything is upside down with this, the messaging on this, mm-hmm. this infection and on the vaccines. And I think that it's going to be up to all of us to take a look at the information and make the best decision we can for ourselves.
What about this 94 degrees below zero thing you mentioned?
Right. That's true for the Pfizer vaccine. It's sub-zero refrigeration that's required. Now, I understand Pfizer's trying to work on a way to not have it be that cold. Moderna's vaccine doesn't require as much of a deep sub-zero refrigeration. So I don't know all the ins and outs of why it's required, but that is the requirement, which is why they have special trucks and special refrigerators. My question is, it's a big country. How much are we going to be able to guarantee that refrigeration will work and that it is going to be, you know, uniform? I do not know how to answer the third part of his question.
Great. Okay. And I believe Gary Ka has referred to that previous thank you for the call here from Atlanta. Let's go now to Terry in Wisconsin. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi. I am a nurse, an RN. I work on a COVID unit here in Wisconsin. And, of course, the leadership for our hospital system is all excited about this vaccine and that we're going to have it soon. There was some mention of it being not mandatory, but what is mandatory is by next week we all have to download what's called a Ripple app to our phone. I think it probably has some of this, like health partners or something. Jim, I know you talked about that earlier this year, and I feel like I'm going to be a test case in their study.
Wow.
And I don't know. I wonder, too, if I refuse to have it, I'm not sure the security of my employment with this company. So, yeah, I'm nervous. It really directly affects me.
Thank you for that, Terry. Barbara?
Yes, I feel so for the healthcare workers, particularly those who have underlying healthcare conditions that have not been thoroughly studied with regard to the testing of these vaccines.
Tell you what, I'm going to interrupt you right there, and we're going to pick up more of the discussion after this break here. Terry, thank you for the call. Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us on Crosstalk. And what about those healthcare workers? Some of these mandates that are coming down to them at this time, as well as even this tracking that some want to have with cell phone apps and so forth. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. We have a TV show on our website. It's all about a 25-page report written by a group of Democrats. Many of them we would call neo-Marxist. One is a proud Islamist. The report is called Secular Democrats of America. And the 25-page report reveals what they want to do if Joe Biden does become president. And it includes crushing and destroying traditional Christians in America, conservative Christians. They refer to them as the religious right or as Christian nationalists. They go on to declare that they want the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice to recognize these white Christian nationalists as a national security threat, as a hate group, and they want them to invest resources to, quote, de-radicalization programs aimed at, end quote, these hate groups. My friends, this is a serious threat. Pay attention.
Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us here today on Crosstalk. She is the president of the National Vaccine Information Center. Again, to stay informed, you can check out their site, nvic.org, nvicadvocacy.org, where they keep abreast of legislation popping up in states across the nation. Also, the vaccine, thevaccinereaction.org. Barbara, the call right before the break, a healthcare worker kind of concerned that they're going to be really part of, you know, like a guinea pig, like a test case study here through some, so we know what's happened with the flu vaccination, where it's become mandatory for certain vocations. Concerned about that, but also any kind of app that they have to put on either for tracking or for other purposes.
Yes, well, under an emergency use authorization, which is all they have right now for Pfizer and probably will have for Moderna, that's being heard today, you have to give the person informed consent. You cannot force the vaccine on someone under an emergency use authorization. Once the vaccines have been formally licensed, which will probably happen fairly quickly, then employers and others can say, well, you have to get it or you can't do this or that, right? The healthcare workers need to get to their unions, and they need to make sure that the unions are representing their informed consent rights. Because, you know, the healthcare workers are going to be among the first to get these vaccines. They say that the healthcare workers and the elderly are going to be the first in line. If I were a healthcare worker, I'd be talking to my union.
Thank you for that. Let's go to Patricia next in Ohio. You're on the air, Patricia.
Yes, thank you. I have heard that the vaccine injection includes a tracking chip so that that we can be tracked. Is that true?
I have not had proof. I have not had concrete proof that's true. There's been a lot of rumor out there. I think where it's coming from is Bill Gates and others have said that there should be a way to track everybody. Like, Jim, you and I were talking about the ink tattoo.
Right, this quantum
that they had suggested several months ago.
And that's more of a patch.
So you can read your whole vaccination history on your wherever
right.
you've gotten vaccinated.
Right.
This is all methods that are in development for trying to track people's vaccination history and their medical history on their bodies, if you will. I have not seen any concrete proof about chips being put in any of these vaccines.
Yeah, the other is more of the patch that we've talked about,
right?
That would put on with the micro needles that go in and put that dye inside, and that's more for the tracking, other than this getting an injection into the arm here at this point.
Right.
Great. Thank you, Patricia. Steve is next, Grand Chute, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm a brand new listener to VCY, and I'm listening right now, and I think you just kind of addressed one of my questions about the infrared dyes with the smartphone detection.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if Barbara knew anything about the structure of the COVID itself, whether it's more natural of a virus or if it's more lab generated that would look more like germ warfare.
Well, there is an awful lot of controversy ongoing, both in the public arena and in the pages of medical literature. There are scientists who insist that this was a man-made lab, genetically engineered virus, and that it may be a bioweapon, that it may originated in countries that are seeking to disrupt the world order. Certainly, the world order has been disrupted. But there are others who insist that it came from the animal kingdom and somehow jumped species into humans. I think that this is going to be it will eventually all play out. and we'll know a lot more. But again, it shows how much we really don't know for sure about this virus, how it acts in the human body, what kind of long-term effects it has, because there are people, and I know, you know, who have had it and do have long-term side effects from it, whether it's AFib, heart irregularity, whether it's extreme fatigue that they can't get over. I mean, when you get a really bad case of COVID-19, it's not a trivial infection. And so the same is true for the vaccines, though. We just don't know enough. When you don't know about the virus and you're trying to make a vaccine that is going to prevent an infection, you're operating in a vacuum of scientific knowledge, and that's where things get very risky.
Thank you, Steve, for the call. Next, we have, we've got Beth calling next from West Dallas. You're on the air.
Yes, Barbara, I have a question regarding the RNA in these vaccines, how they're produced, because my understanding is that attaches or changes the DNA in a person so that any future generations are going to have that marker on them from this vaccine. Mm. And also, you know, the shedding of vaccines for even people that don't get them, I mean, what happens with the shedding?
These are not live. The Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines, are not live virus vaccines, which is where the shedding has been the concern. In other words, a live polio vaccine, you can shed vaccine strain poliovirus after swallowing the live polio vaccine. And the same with the influenza vaccine, the nasal flu vaccine, you can shed live vaccine strain influenza when you get those vaccines. This RNA technology is not, you're not supposed to be shedding anything. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be shown to be true, but that they say that that's not a problem. The other part, is it going to change your DNA? There is some controversy about that. The companies and the government are insisting that it does not affect, that it doesn't change your DNA. Again, do we have enough information? I would argue that we don't understand all the potential repercussions of turning your body into a vaccine manufacturing plant. And if you have a reaction, if you have an autoimmune reaction, a hyper-inflammatory response to this injection, and you have a process that basically doesn't turn off, what is that going to do to you? And if you come from a family that has a history of severe allergies or has a history of autoimmunity, there certainly is the potential for high-risk groups having a reaction that can't be turned off.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest. Can people send in questions through your website, too?
They certainly can.
Okay.
We'll do our best. We have a small staff, but we'll do our best to answer them.
Thank you, Barbara, for being with us today.
Okay.
Bye-bye. NVIC.org is the website. Thanks for listening to Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.